Hey, welcome to the On The Ball Soccer Podcast. Mexico are on the brink as they are beaten by their neighbours in the north. We look back at this week's past Premier League results, more issues for FIFA concerning the Qatar 2022 World Cup, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic talks Arsenal, Beckham, and everyone's favourite subject, Jose Mourinho. We're running down the wing like a 17-year-old Ryan Giggs. We're on the ball. Hey, welcome everybody to the On The Ball Soccer Podcast. It's me, Jake Fields. I'm here with producer Giovanni, and West Overstreet is with us this morning. How you doing, West?
Doing great.
Now, but before we start the football banter and the football discussion, big fight last night, goes without mentioning. We were just talking about it, us three here at the pod. Thoughts? You were supporting Mayweather, of course.
Absolutely. Why not? I mean, technically gifted, never disrespects the sport in the ring, works as hard as anybody.
In the ring, works as hard as anybody.
I mean, he's just amazing. He just put on an amazing performance last night.
I have to say that I was working at the time. If people don't know, this is not my day job. And I was watching the fight while I was at work, and absolutely packed in the restaurant. And I mean, it was interesting from what I saw. It was built up as this might actually happen, the dethroning of Floyd Mayweather, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen ever, which is interesting enough. But a good fight, and we enjoyed it. Onto the football Premier League results. Actually, why not? We'll talk about Chelsea first.
Way to start off the day. My day actually didn't start off so great yesterday. It started with Chelsea losing. I was planning on betting a trifecta yesterday with Chelsea beating Everton, and then in American football, college football, Texas A&M beating Alabama. I lost that one as well, but you know, Floyd Mayweather brought it home for me last night. Dismantling Canelo.
In terms of the first Jose Mourinho defeat of the second coming, what do you think?
I mean, I think he was pretty spot on in his comments about it. I mean, the form up front, it's terrible. Like, we're just wasteful. I think we had some 22 shots, and I think like 9 are on goal or something like that, 8 were on goal. I mean, we were just wasteful in front. Particularly Eto'o, I mean, he's new to the team, but he still was given splendid chances to score. I remember there was one play, Sherla was wasteful. Still trying to figure out exactly why he's in the squad starting every time. I mean, I understand his work rate's really high, and I know that's something that Mourinho really, really appreciates, but put in a really lazy cross back across after they stole a back pass into Eto'o, who was wide open, but it was such a slow pass that Barry was able to run back there and pretty much stop an open net goal for Meto. But it were just really, really wasteful. And then even Mourinho, he really went for it towards the end of the game. I mean, we went to 3 defensive players in the back, had 2 strikers. And, I mean, he just kind of left it up to the team to go out there and make it happen. And we're just so – it's just not – we're not connecting in the final third.
Was there any link-up play between Torres and – And that too?
Not at all. I don't think they combined anything. I don't think either one of them passed the ball to each other. We were really, really narrow. Everything was coming through the middle. Never really got out wide. I think I'm trying to remember who we took off and put Ramirez in out wide. I think I can't remember who came off, but we had Ramirez out wide on the right and Hazard on the left, Mata through the middle, and it just... That's not Ramirez's style to be out wide. He likes to come up through the middle, and it was just too packed in there. And
I mean, speaking of,
we were wasteful.
Speaking of Juan Mata, how do you think he? I mean, started. This is the first game, I guess.
First game started. He still has a little bit of a fitness issue. That's why he came out. But he really, really started taking control. I guess probably about the 35th minute until he came off. Really, really depth touches. Really took over the midfield. We were just being wasteful with the chance that we provided. I mean, we're beautifully creative. Even when we were just playing so narrow, I mean, the intricate play between Mata, Hazard, and Eto'o. I mean, Eto'o's touch was sensational, aside from when it was time to put it in the back of the net. Link-up play with those three was really, really strong. But once again, I mean, it doesn't really matter how beautiful or creative it is, and if you don't put it in the back of the net.
Chelsea hat off. We have to give a bit of credit to Everton.
Oh, absolutely.
Good win for Roberto Martinez's team.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, their goal was a little bit. It was definitely against the run of play. I think it was Jovic had an incredible header to save the ball from going out of bounds, and it came back across to Naismith, who headed it past Cech. Both of them made extraordinary plays on that particular play. Everton played well. They played well enough to win, so you got to give them credit for that. Martinez, amazing coach. Hopefully, he can help give Lukaku some first. Team run.
And Lukaku couldn't play, obviously.
Yeah, he can't play because obviously he can't play against your parent squad, yeah. Chelsea. But he actually called the win. He predicted Everton would win. I mean, I guess he knew the striker situation because he was there and realized we wouldn't be able to score. So
looking forward to Chelsea's Champions League next week.
Yeah,
I believe won't have any bearing on it, although at least want to bounce back quite quickly.
No, absolutely. I'm sure Torres will be happy to be in Champions League, and I mean he plays really, really well in the cups outside of the Premier League. So, I mean, well, I think all of his goals except for one came outside the Premier League last year. So,
yeah,
he seems to raise his level in games outside of the Premier League. So, he'll probably get the start.
I mean, we'll certainly see. But disappointed for Mourinho and Chelsea fans.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it was a game that we should have won, but you know, Everton pulled it out. They played well. They play a little different than they had when they played with Moyes. Way more patient. They take their time, move the ball around, and it worked for them.
I mean, from obviously Chelsea's defeat, Arsenal win. The reverse of the crisis continues. We watched the highlights together.
Ozil.
Yeah, talk to me about Mesut Ozil.
Mesut Ozil, I mean, his touch, absolutely amazing. I mean, he meshed perfectly with that squad. He's going to definitely give him that final cutting edge to create chances that are, I mean, great chances. Chances that are easy to convert. Like, that's what the type of player that he is, that's what he does best. He puts you in a situation. You want your creative player to put you in a situation where it's easiest for you to score. And, I mean, the ball he laid out for Walcott, I mean, when he hit it, I was like, where's that ball going? And it was perfect. I mean, a little better shot from Walcott, and he scores. And then the cross from the left, was that to Giroud?
For the goal.
Who was that?
That was to Giroud, yeah.
Yeah, to Giroud. One touch with the right foot, and then the left touch. I think it went between the guy's legs. Mm. It was amazing. A great, great, great touch. I'm still baffled.
Could have had three assists.
Yeah, three assists. I'm still baffled that he's not a Real Madrid player. I don't see why. I mean, the way he jumped in that squad yesterday, I mean, Arsenal's a lot better from that move, definitely.
Definitely. I think, you know,
he was surgical.
We were talking about, obviously, in previous weeks, that maybe a midfielder wasn't what Arsenal needed. But when you saw that first touch that he made and then released it, you thought, wow, this guy.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things where some people are just so good that it doesn't matter if that's what you needed. If you put them in a squad, they're going to be better. Yeah, you might not need a quarterback, but if you put Peyton Manning or something in there as your quarterback, you're going to be better.
Yeah.
And the same with, like, somebody might not need a winger, but if you put Cristiano Ronaldo in your squad, you're going to be better. And Mesut Ozil showed that he's that type of player. That wasn't necessarily what they needed, but you put him in that squad, and they're going to be better because he's there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, quick word on Jesse Altidore, who played, obviously, for Sunderland, had a goal, legitimately, I suppose, disallowed. Try to paint the picture. I guess he's one-on-one with Sagner. Sagner's pulling him or pulling each other. Referee blows the whistle, but if the referee had let play go on, Altidore goes on, scores.
So many times that they let the play go on and they let the run of play go on, That's what should have happened this time. He shouldn't have blown the whistle. I mean, if he wanted to call the fight, he should have done it after, you know, the play had gone on. It's one of those tough things because, and I think it's, I think his decision was probably affected by how players tend to dive. And most players in that situation would have dove or fell or like allowed themselves to be pulled backwards or fell backwards. Altidore did, was contrary to what most players do. He kept fighting and wanted to get the ball because he was trying to get to the back of the net. And I think that influenced the decision of the referee in advance, expecting him to go ahead and fall or flop or dive like a lot of people would, even though he wouldn't have been in that situation. A lot of players would have. And so it was kind of a preemptive whistle, even though there was an actual foul committed as opposed to letting the play run on.
Yeah. So and then obviously the second mistake being that got to be a red card, surely the Sagner, because he fouls Altidore, but Altidore gets away and scores, gets pulled back. Got to be a red, last man.
It should be a red, yeah. Absolutely.
I guess we sympathize with Paolo Di Canio just a little bit. And he was sent to the stands. He was he was interviewed after the game, and he said that basically he was complaining about this decision. And the referee comes over and says, "Look, if you open your mouth, if you continue, I'm going to send you to the stands." And Di Canio says, "Why don't you complete the perfect job by sending me to the stands?" apparently as a joke, although it didn't look quite like a joke. And obviously the referee took it seriously, and off the coach went to the stands.
Jesus.
And Sunderland are in big trouble. I mean, I said before we came on air, I think Di Canio is a real candidate to be the first Premier League managerial sacking. Of the season, and it could happen. Although the fans do like him, and they do cheer him, even when he was walking up to the stands. next game, Manchester United, Crystal Palace. Obviously, Crystal Palace, newly pyramid side. Their coach Ian Holloway was in the stands after his comments. After the first game of the season, he was fined, I believe, £18,000 and was unavailable on the bench. Here's the diving Ashley Young issue. So he dives in the first half, clearly throws his leg out, intentionally getting caught, gets a yellow, and then he's, I guess, fouled for the penalty, but it's not a penalty, it's way outside the box. And he goes down. David Moyes said after the game, he's going to try to, you know, pull Ashley Young aside, tell him not to dive. But Van Persie steps up again. Doesn't seem to miss these penalties. Scores a great one. Yeah, I thought him and Rooney were fantastic together. Rooney Absolutely. With this big old bandage on his head. Looked a bit ridiculous. And then Rooney scores a beautiful free kick. And Ferguson was in the stands, which was a bit interesting watching his former club. I guess there's nothing Man U to worry about. I mean, people were worrying at Man U.
Yeah.
I mean, Moyes hadn't got off to the greatest starts. Yeah. This was his first victory, I believe, at home in the league.
And this was Crystal Palace. But, you know, I think we might talk about Zlatan a little bit later, but one of the things that he talked about was Rooney and how Rooney was his favorite player, not because he goes out and scores 30 goals in a season, but he works so hard for his team and he works so hard for other players to score. And then he's still like an exceptional player, shows with a free kick and then his ability to link up with Van Persie. I think that's an amazing partnership. I mean, I would have loved for him to come to Chelsea and have been our point man. But you know, that didn't happen, but it just speaks volumes to how good Rooney is when he's focused and playing and getting time on the pitch.
Yeah, there was one chance in, believe it was the first half, where Rooney puts it over, goes over the defence, Van Persie just chests it on the volley, shoots and hits the bar, and it was one of those.
Yeah, I mean,
almost like last season when Rooney scored Rooney's pass cross field and Van Persie scored that wonder goal.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too many strikes in the world more clinical than Van Persie. I mean, his touch, first touch, is as good as it gets, in my opinion, especially for strikers. Like, and it's always he hits a shot, it's always going to be on frame. Like, he's going to give it a chance to go in on every touch. So,
Quick word on Marouane Fellaini. Came on the bench. Looked decent. Had a shot decently saved. I guess time will tell. Obviously, I've spoken on the pod before. I think he's a good signing.
Yeah.
And he came out this week and said he wants to be the new Roy Keane. A bit premature. I mean,
yeah, about that.
People look back on Roy Keane slightly differently because since he's retired, he's had a falling out with Sir Alex Ferguson and right. criticised various aspects. But as a player, I mean, him and Patrick Vieira, you could argue, at their time, were two of the best defensive midfielders in the world, let alone the Premier League. So right. It's early days for Fellaini to say,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to be Roy Keane.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's an aspiration. It's what he wants to be. Obviously, you're not going to really get to see how technically sound he will be in that midfield against Crystal Palace. But you know, it was a good start to come in and get your feet wet playing with the first team. So he's got time to grow, and we'll see how he goes when he's under some real pressure. When you're playing against the midfield of like Chelsea or this revamped Arsenal or the attacking prowess of Liverpool.
Who by the time people hear this podcast would have played and might have won.
Yeah, I mean, taking them back to the top of the top of the table. They win,
that's absolutely true. And obviously, quick note, in the Man United game, again, Shinji Kagawa was absent to the amusement of the fans. So we'll see what happens with him and that story unravels. We're not going to talk a lot about the other games, unless you want to.
Yeah, we can.
Note that Stoke getting a 0-0 draw at home. Manchester City, Manuel Pellegrini failing to win.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, I think his reasoning behind that was something along the lines of most of our team was out on national games, so we really only had one day of full practice to prepare for Stoke. And I was kind of like, you have a little bit too much talent for that to be your excuse. I mean, obviously you didn't practice this much, that much this week for Stoke, but I mean, with the squad and the payroll and the talent that they have, I don't think 0-0. Stoke. I mean, it is a result. It's better than losing, but it's definitely not what he was expecting.
Like,
if you would have asked him, would you take a 0-0 draw at Stoke before that game started? He would be like, absolutely not. So for him to come out and say afterwards, oh well, you know, this is the excuse. I don't know if I necessarily would want my manager to say that in that situation between those two teams. But you know, Stoke played well.
It speaks volumes that after the end of the game, the Stoke players were almost celebrating like they had won the game. I guess it meant a lot to Mark Hughes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Being set, what was it, 4 years ago?
Mancini was there how long? Three seasons,
three
I think?
Three seasons. So 4 years ago. Yeah. Hughes was there.
So
yeah. It'd have been nice for Stoke to get a goal. I mean, they were a little bit wasteful.
Yeah.
They had two really good opportunities first, one in the first and one in the second half. But.
Another big result, Aston Villa, who beat Arsenal on the opening day, lost at home 2-1 Newcastle.
Yeah.
Hatem Ben Arthur.
Ben Arthur finally showed up. I was waiting for him.
He did.
Yeah, I finally picked him up in my fantasy team.
Me too.
I've been waiting all year, like, what is he going to do? Because like you spoke about earlier, I mean, for a midfielder, he takes a lot of shots and he's a little bit wasteful, but he goes for it. And that's an admirable quality in him.
He's certainly picking up the slack where Lloyd Remy played yesterday, obviously on loan from QPR, one of the obviously multiple debutants, and he was distinctly average, unfortunately. But Ben Arthur, obviously youngish talent, he is getting a little bit on in terms of being considered young, but did well.
Absolutely. And then you know Benteke from Aston Villa.
Yeah.
Consistent.
He's the only one that wins me any points in my fantasy.
He's pretty consistent. I mean, you're going to get a goal that came from Benteke so far, so. The Belgium striker looking great. So.
Well, see, and the team, good segue, the team he was obviously linked to heavily in the summer, Tottenham Hotspur, they won at Norwich. Now, it wasn't the greatest Norwich display I'd ever seen.
But
all the talk of these signings that Spurs have made, the Paulinhos, the Soldados. Christian Eriksen played. I thought he played well and linked the play up very well, exceptionally well, to be honest.
Right.
And including one goal he set up for Sigurdsson.
Yeah.
Who's almost a forgotten man. I think Kevin on the pod said a few weeks ago that maybe Sigurdsson was going to leave before the transfer window. But
yeah, he came in last year, though, right?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, he came in last year, okay.
He came in with that Dempsey time.
Dempsey time, yeah.
Dempsey time. Sigurdsson gets two goals. Solid win for Spurs. It shows, yeah, shows that life after Gareth Bale is fun.
Yeah, I was only thing I was surprised that Eric Lamela didn't start. He came in as a substitute again. I was like, I was overly impressed with his 10-minute showing last time. I was like, oh, this guy has to be in the starting 11. Like, what's going on? Like, but you know, ABB doing a good job over there. You know,
yeah. So. Be interested to see. He did say this week that. He reiterated, like, Spurs are bigger than one player. But on to that, I mean, that's the Premier League results, or the big headlines. On that, we do the Spurs quick segue. Gareth Bale makes his debut. Scores, took him 35 minutes. Did you see the goal?
To open his account, yeah, I did.
Yeah, I mean, it was very Ronaldo-esque almost, that he was almost at the back post getting there.
Yeah, it was... great effort. I mean, it's a hustle goal.
Yeah.
Technique was pretty good. But you know, but it's good. I mean, to open that account, you know, whenever you're expected to be a scorer, striker, scorer/striker in his position, confidence is key. Coming out getting that early goal, an important goal for Real Madrid, a meaningful goal, is good. I mean, that's all you need to keep putting coins in your confidence bank. And that's the main thing about being a striker, is having that confidence and being able to score. And so him doing that in that game, it being a meaningful goal, it was great for him.
And in the build up of the game, I know Twitter and Facebook were going crazy for about a day or so with this slide tackle by Ronaldo in training. I don't know if people have seen the video.
Yeah, I saw the picture. I didn't see that. I saw a picture of him like sliding.
Ronaldo in the air, yeah. Just getting ready to pounce.
Yeah, but I didn't actually see the video.
If people don't know, check it out on YouTube. Cristiano Ronaldo, they're practicing. I guess it's five or six Real Madrid players. Bale, Ronaldo's there. Obviously, assistant coach Zinedine Zidane was there. And they're playing, just passing it around between each other. And Ronaldo goes to, I guess, slide tackle Bale and caught him a little bit. And you see Zidane and the other players just laughing, like, what the hell is this joker doing? Like, fouling, almost fouling, you know. Not worthy for training, that kind of tackle. I have to admit, I haven't, and this is very bad of me, I didn't watch the Kaká debut, so I can't comment on it. I guess we can't comment on it. For all those, yeah, comment it. Tell us how Kaká did.
Yeah, we were definitely waiting for that. We'll definitely, by next week, we will comment on Kaká and how he's performing at AC Milan.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we were shorthanded today.
We were.
Two on the podcast, so... We had to limit all the topics.
We
it's
did.
To get all the games in, especially in one day. So
I did hear, please forgive me if I'm wrong, I believe AC Milan drew. They're playing Torino. And Kaká did play. Interesting note, former Chelsea, AC Milan, Dynamo Kiev striker, Andrei Shevchenko, who's been retired a year. I think he retired after Euro 2012. Played in an open golf tournament. Did you hear about this, Wes?
I did not.
He played it. Shevchenko, he quit, obviously, professional football, soccer, and took up golf, as a lot of players do play golf, and went into this open challenge and was like four strokes off the pace, or 40 strokes off the pace by the end of the...
40 strokes?
Like something ridiculous.
40?
Yes.
Wow.
No joke. People look it up. So it wasn't a very good day for old Shevchenko.
Wow.
But I digress. By the way, the other Spanish news: Barcelona overcame Sevilla. Just managed to nick the win there. Neymar again proving me wrong, playing very very well, almost outshining Messi, which is quite a criminal act, I suppose, if you're in the Catalan capital.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Onto the, I guess, a note on the Qatar World Cup. If people don't know this whole 22 World Cup scenario, we've spoken it periodically throughout the weeks, and I'm sure all the way up until summer or winter 2022, we'll still be talking about it. I guess the FIFA's medical chief medical officer came out and said there's no way this World Cup's going to happen in the summer. And now it looks like a real possibility it's going to happen in the winter, but legal issues are now coming into it.
It looks like that Blatter and Qatar are going to push for the winter, and it's initially going to go seem like it's going to go that way. It's going to be a hard, hard fought battle. I mean, you're going to have to fight. I mean, they got so many fronts to deal with. The major European leagues who played during the winter, the effects that has on their schedule that year and the years after that. TV rights. Fox paid $1 billion Fox and Telemundo paid $1 billion for the rights in America for 2018 and 2012.
In the summer.
Yeah, in the summer. Yeah, in the wintertime, that's going to affect American football and other sports. They're going to be upset about that. So it's going to be a hard sell. And then a lot of the leagues across the world just want Blatter to just open the discussion and do, like, analysis on the effects of moving it to the winter. They don't have enough facts on dollars versus other events that are happening right now to make an educated decision of moving it to the winter. And next, it seems like it was basically a bait and switch. They paid for it, got it, and knowing that there was going to be an issue with it being in the summertime and saying, okay, well, we'll build these cool indoor stadiums, like 12 stadiums within 20 miles of each other or something like that. And yeah, everything will be fine. And now all of a sudden it's like, we got to move it to wintertime. It's like, you knew from the beginning that this was going to be an issue. And I think that Qatar was like the one place that was rated as, like it was, there was like a rating, a ratio of like possible, difficulties in having the World Cup in that in a particular site, and I think of the finalists, Qatar was by far the worst rated of having issues of the World Cup coming off without a hitch, and they still got the bid, and they're already like, what, 4 years after winning the bid, they're already having issues about where it's going to be summer winter. That's just, I don't think it can be resolved by moving to the winter.
Qatar out. Well, they won the right to host the World Cup over Australia, the U.S., Japan, and Korea. Or Japan and Korea, I believe, was a joint bid.
Right.
I mean, if they do choose to move it to winter, which, to be honest, looks about 90% done now, you're going to have these nations coming out and say, look, we all bid for the World Cup on the premise that it was going to be in the summer. Now, if you want to do it, have a premise of doing it in the winter, that's how your bid should have been.
Right. And then I think, what did Blatter say? He said that... it was something. It was about bidding for that year, not necessarily
for that
summer or winter.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's crazy. It's gonna have. I don't think it's gonna be. It's not moving. It's not gonna move to the winter. That's not gonna happen.
You don't think so?
It's gonna cause too much. I mean, how do you? Are the leagues gonna reschedule their whole seasons based on the World Cup
for 3 years? Yeah, apparently.
For 3 years. I don't think they're gonna agree to that. That just doesn't make sense. That's too much. Yeah. For something that's been going on for over 100... How long has the World Cup been going around?
The World Cup?
Yeah.
1927?
By then it'll be 100 years, almost. That's been going on at the same time. And then you're changing it because of the weather of... it's too much history.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Go for it. Absolutely.
I'd
love to hear a good argument.
The devil's advocate would say it's called the World Cup, and therefore... the World Cup should be hosted, you know, obviously changing periodically, all the different regions throughout the world. So why shouldn't Qatar get the World Cup?
No, they should get the World Cup, but they should be able to host it just like anybody else in the world would be able to host it in the summertime and accommodate the people that are going to be going to the event and safely have the athletes be able to perform there.
But I'm playing devil's advocate. That if we were talking about where you couldn't play in the summer in a very hot place, well, that rules out quite a substantial amount of the world, surely.
I'm not saying that you can't have it there because it's too hot, but you have to make sure that you're able to accommodate the players there. I'm not saying it shouldn't be in Qatar. Yeah. But I'm saying it should be in the summer, and they have to do what they need to do to hold up their end of the contract for the bid that they won.
Yeah.
They need to do whatever they have to do, spend the money they have to spend to make it suitable for the players to be able to perform at a maximum level.
Yeah.
At the World Cup. Now, I'm not saying take it away from them. Yeah, it should. We need to have a World Cup in the Middle East. But they have to hold up to the responsibility of preparations. Just like Brazil, when they had issues getting their stadiums built, they got it worked out. They got those stadiums built. Mm. They got the security issues fixed. I mean, there's things that you have to overcome to make this happen. And when you made the bid, that's your obligation to the world. Yeah. That people from all over the world can come to your country and safely watch these games and watch athletes perform at their highest level safely.
You said that very eloquently. But I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
I mean, think you're absolutely right.
No one wants to take it from Qatar. We just want it to be safe. That's it. Yeah.
We just want to go there and not sweat buckets every time we walk out.
I just don't want to go and faint. Just pass out.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic's autobiography. We're on the ball. And we're back on the ball. Breaking news. Cristiano Ronaldo. If you remember, there was huge speculation that maybe one day he might come back to Manchester United or go somewhere else. He has agreed an extension of his Real Madrid contract, a reported €17 million. So that's £14.25 million a year, signed up till 2018. Needless to say, he is one of the world's best. It's a fantastic signing. Quickly on to, before we talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic, producer Gio mentioned at the start of the show, before we kicked off here, Mexico, USA, West, we watched the game together last week. It seems forever ago.
Yeah, it really does seem like it was a long time.
We've been caught up in this Mayweather saga, caught up with the Premier League coming back. Yeah. What did you make of USA, Mexico?
You know, I really thought Mexico was going to... before the game, I thought Mexico was going to win the game. I thought that even though they'd fired their coach, they had the Olympic coach there as the new coach, and I thought that the U.S. would be handicapped not having four players due to cards and suspensions. But they just really... the U.S. team just really came together, especially in the midfield, and controlled the Mexican attack. And their nemesis, and your nemesis, Landon Donovan, once again stepped up against Mexico and played a fabulous game. One goal, one assist. That's all you can expect for your best players. Is to perform in the biggest games, and when the U.S. is down four players and he steps up like that, I mean, you can't really ask more of your player than that.
He was definitely a leader on the field, and him and Dempsey, my boy Beckerman, was on the bench. Thought he looked his hair was looking good. And Mexico, I was surprised they performed, you know, not the greatest game by a Mexican side, which was disappointing. Obviously, they had Chicharito and Giovanni Dos Santos and Guardado. Are they going to qualify for the World Cup?
Dude, you know, it's crazy. I mean, obviously, the top two spots are locked up. U.S. is in. Costa Rica's in. Honduras is three. Who's four? Can't really think about who's four right now. Panama. Panama's four, Mexico's five. So top three go automatic. Four plays a play-in against New Zealand. I hope Mexico makes it. I don't think they'll make it to three. I think they'll make it to four and play New Zealand for the play-in. One of the reasons I hope that they make it, it's not even necessarily a soccer reason, it's economic reasons. For Mexico, soccer's a huge thing. Morale for the country. Stuff like that, but I believe that over 600, I think they've put like almost $600 million in advertising and marketing into the national team from the Mexican economy, and you don't get any of that back or recouped if your team doesn't really make the World Cup. And so just from a North American standpoint and being a neighboring country in Mexico, it's a big loss for that country to put that much money into something and not get the return of them not making it to a World Cup. So I hope they make it. They should make it. They have the talent.
Yeah.
They just got to bring it together these next two games and do their best to get 6 points.
For sure. Let me quickly ask Gio. how big of a, you know, how big of a thing would this be if Mexico weren't to qualify for the World Cup?
Jeez, huge, definitely. Like, it's part of the culture, very much like, you know, back on the other side of the pond for you. It's just a must.
Yeah,
you know, you don't really think about any other way. You hit it on the nail. The countries invest money. It's just what we do. So to not have that, it's a big hit.
Yeah, it's a big thing. I think they weren't in the World Cup in 90 because I think there were some issues with players' ages or something like that. There was some untruths told about player ages. But I think before that, it was like 82 is the last time that I think Mexico wasn't in the World Cup. And I think Viva Mexico. They're going to make it. Let's go. Vamos. Vamos. Let's go, Mexico.
We keep our fingers crossed. Keep our fingers. I do hope they do. You know, they do qualify as well. Onto Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Talking about his recent interviews and autobiography. I'll quickly say what I found most interesting about it. I thought he talked about Arsenal and how he was at Malmo in Sweden, and Arsene Wenger called him over, and well, his agent and Malmo said, "You're going to go meet Arsene Wenger," and he meets Arsene Wenger, and he tells the story that he was looking out the window at the training ground. He saw Bergkamp, Henry. Who else did he see? Hold up 1 second. He saw Bergkamp, Henry, Wiltord, and he thought to himself, "These are the guys I see on television." Yeah. You know, very very interesting to see the young Zlatan Ibrahimovic before obviously the superstar.
Still had the ego at the time.
And this is what he said, is that Arsene Wenger said to him, "Okay, well, in effect, you're going to have a trial. We're going to check out on the pitch how good you are." And that's where he says, "My ego kicked in. I thought, why do I need to prove myself?
Yeah.
Surely if you're asking me here, you know how good I am.
Yeah,
you should time me."
Yeah, and then I think he mentioned something. That now thinking back on it, it might have been a slight
miscommunication
because his English wasn't that good, and he might have just been like, "Hey, we just want you to go play and practice with the team," and he took it as, "Oh, you don't know how good I am." Obviously, they already knew how good he was because they invited him there. You know, they just wanted to see him play with the players. But is that when Juventus? Wait,
No. He said that Ajax came in later.
Ajax, there you go. Ajax. Sorry about that.
And Ajax said to him, "We want you," you know, plain and simple. And he said, "I'm there."
Yeah, they want me. I'm in.
You mentioned his comments on Wayne Rooney. I mean, that is interesting. I mean, it's kind of obvious that Wayne Rooney's a fantastic player, but it's nice. It's interesting to see another fellow professional come out and say, "Look, this is how I rate Wayne Rooney."
Yeah, especially Zlatan. From him to say that about another player, it really rang home because he's seen as, because I mean, obviously I don't know him personally, just with his behavior and things he does, really self-centered, cared about himself, but him to speak out on Rooney's behalf like that, especially in a time kind of where Rooney has been bashed quite a bit for trying to, you know, I don't know how hard he's really fought to get out of Manchester United because it's kind of blurry. Like, there's a lot of speculation on this, a lot of speculation on that.
He said, she said.
He said, she said. Yeah. He's not really saying anything, but he's been really hammered over it. And for him to come out and say, "Hey, you know, this is the type of person, this is the type of player he is. He works hard for his team. He gives everything he can. He might not score a ton of goals, but he works hard for the other players so that they're able to score goals and facilitates." It's a really strong statement coming from Zlatan, who's perceived as a person that's really self-centered and only caring about his what he does. A great champion, though.
Yeah.
Like nine league titles in 10 years. You know how he does.
Fantastic. I mean, I know we're short on time here. Two of our favorite subjects Zlatan spoke about. He spoke about David Beckham at PSG. If I can read a quote from him. He said, "As a person, he's amazing. He was shy at the beginning for the first few months, but then I got to know him. We had a fantastic time. You hear a lot about Beckham, but when you meet the real person, I only have positives to say. As a footballer, it's important to be yourself." And he tells a story which I thought was really interesting, because obviously these soccer players are huge stars.
Absolutely.
And he said that, you know, he tells a story about Beckham went out with his kids or whatever, and kind of got away, lived a normal life. And Zlatan said that he found it amazing that, okay, Zlatan, you said, a champion, huge star, arguably still one of the best strikers in the world.
Yeah, I don't even think that's arguably.
Right?
He is one of the best strikers in the world.
And then you have David Beckham, who, this is a bit strong, who is almost the Michael Jordan of the sport in terms of his
popularity.
He's eclipsed the sport in many ways. He's
absolutely
a cult figure.
Yeah.
And he said that to see someone like David Beckham, who's such a global superstar, live a normal life, he realized, well, if he can go out and not be afraid of all these cameras and try to get on with his life, then I should be able to.
Absolutely.
As well. I thought it was very, it shows that what you said about Zlatan, the way we perceive his character, and therefore when he's complimenting another professional, it rings home a lot truer. Well, that's what he's saying about Beckham is very humbling. Basically,
yeah,
I learned from this guy.
Yeah.
And that as well comes across as a very gracious thing to say.
Yeah, very un-Zlatan-like.
Yes.
Who has his first name copyrighted. So, but
yeah,
it's a good.
What do you think? He mentioned Jose Mourinho. I mean, everyone seems to love Mourinho.
Yeah, except for Real Madrid players.
Except if you're Spanish.
Yeah,
play for Real
except
Madrid.
For the Spanish. I don't know. Most people like Mourinho. And to me, it just goes along with what he said. He seems like everywhere except for in Real Madrid, he's a player's coach.
Yeah.
Like, the players love him. He gets the best out of you. You might not get everything you want from him in your career, but he does his best to put you in the best place for your career, if that makes sense. Like, everybody wants starting time. Everybody wants to be on the pitch. But he tries to bring you along in a manner that you get the best out of your ability to help the team win. He's results-oriented, not player, box score-oriented. No, he's about getting results, as we saw, like, with the Manchester United game. He played to get a draw. He played to get a result. It just continues to speak to how Mourinho is with players. I mean, except for outside the experience in Spain.
I mean, from the outside looking in, you would have thought at the time, well, you have a strong personality in Mourinho. You have the strong personality of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and maybe that they would butt heads in a lot of ways. But here's another quote from Zlatan. He said, "When I got to know him, obviously Mourinho, he was amazing. He dragged things out of me that no other coach had done before. When I've played, I felt like the Terminator. I was so confident under him. When he had his talk before the game, he made you feel from being a cat to like a lion." I mean, incredible. Like, I mean, it's not something that we don't know before. We hear how great Jose Mourinho is as a motivator and one-on-one with his players. But again, it shows you from someone like Zlatan that has won all those titles, that has played under Capello, now Ancelotti, the best, you know, some of the best coaches in the world, for him to say, look, this Mourinho guy's outstanding, and, you know, it's good. I mean, it's nice to hear. If you're Jose Mourinho, probably smiling.
Yeah, and it's good. It's like, it's one of those things where I like to hear from players about the coaches.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to say good things. Like, he doesn't play for Jose Mourinho. They have no connection outside of what's personal. So for him to come out and speak, it gives you a more of an insight to a real relationship and a dynamic, as opposed to reporters looking at something and saying, hey, this is what's going on. To have those type of quotes, it really helps you kind of understand, like, what goes on in the locker room and
exactly
what separates him from other managers.
No, hit the nail on the head. For anyone checking out Zlatan's autobiography, there's a lot of quotes online. You can find out he talks about Fabio Capello, his wonder goal against England, if people remember that rightly. Truly fantastic goal that was. Read about it. And we're about done here at the Londoner on Greenville Avenue. So for me, Jake Fields, Gio, thank you very much. It was good. We need to hear you talk a lot more on the show and give your views.
Great producer.
Yeah, great producer.
And DJ. DJ Gio.
Now available for all bookings.
Ooh.
What do you do? Weddings? Quinceañeras, bro.
I have.
He does it all.
Man of many talents. Wes, thank you so much.
Man, always glad to be here.
By the way, the game that we came upstairs to record this podcast, it was West Ham, Southampton, and it ended 0-0.
0-0, yeah.
West Ham?
They were the better side, though. They were playing. They were a little wasteful up front, but, you know, it happens.
Any last comment from any of you? I was going to say, go on, you Irons.
Yeah, go on, you Irons. To get us a hammer.
We love you, West Ham fan. Yeah. See you next week. This is On the Ball.
Is this their moment? Beckham. Into Sheringham. And Solskjaer has got it!
We're on the ball. We're on the ball. We're on the ball. We're on the ball.
We're on the ball.
Ball back there.